February 11th. Hey, check. February 11th, 2015. This is the GTLD Technical Operations Lessons in Caning. Event is from 10:30 to 11:45 local time. I'm going to re-intro it because there were some cutting out. Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. This is the GTLD Technical Operations Lessons located in Caning Room. We'll run from 10:30 to 11:45 a.m. local time.
Hello, everyone. We're going to be starting in a few minutes. In the meantime, you may want to get one of these. We're going to have, in the spirit of internationalization, we're going to have presentations in English and Chinese. So you may want to get one of these. I think English channel is 1, Chinese channel is 4. Hello, everyone. This is Francisco Arias, Director of Technical Services at ICANN. We are going to start the session. One quick thing before we start, well, I guess two. First, if you'd like to take a seat in the U, you're more than welcome. Second thing, this will be a bilingual session. We are going to have presenters in both English and Chinese. So if you, unless you speak both languages, you may want to get one of these in the entrance. So I'll give you a minute to get that. Okay, let's start. Welcome again. In this session, we are going to talk about ETLD technical operations lessons. We are going to talk about some of the issues we have seen with TLDs, the technical issues. We are going to have a panel of registry operators that are going to talk about the issues they have seen, how they have been able to fix those. The intention of this session is to share the experiences that registries have had so that others can learn. The intention here is not to shame anyone or anything like that. I can tell you that we have seen issues with a number of TLDs from minor to not so minor. So I don't think we could say that anyone is free of guilt, if I may say that. So without further ado, let's start with the agenda here. This is a short agenda. We're going to have a short presentation from ICANN on the issues and solutions we have seen so far. This is particularly in reference to the SLA monitoring system, so issues that we have seen with respect to DNS, DNSSEC, and WHOIS, which are the services that we are currently monitoring. And then we're going to have the panel and or short presentation for each of the panelists, and then we have a session of questions and answers. So with this, I'll turn the microphone to Gustavo Lozano in the technical services team to talk about the issues and solutions.
Yeah, hello, this is Gustavo Lozano from ICANN staff. We're in technical services. So let's talk about the SLA monitoring system. So ICANN is monitoring what is defined in the specification 10. So if you go to the new ETLD register agreement, you will find that there is a specification called specification 10, right? And this specification defines basically what ICANN needs to monitor, and basically also defines the algorithm of how we should monitor the critical functional services of the registries. It's important to mention that in this specification, there are two very important things that are defined there. The first one is the emergency thresholds, and these emergency thresholds, it's basically defines when ICANN may invoke the Ibero, and it's very important to mention that this is a may. It's not an automated process, and if we decide to send someone to the Ibero, that's going to be a process or basically human beings are going to make that decision, right? The other thing that is defined in specification 10 are the service level requirements. So basically there is a service level agreement within specification 10, and that's measured on monthly basis. And so how we are doing this? How we are doing this monitoring? Well, basically we have a software platform. This software platform was developed by Savix. Savix is an open source platform, and we hired these guys to develop our own monitoring platform. We also have a backup monitoring system that we develop in-house. This is used when we have a maintenance windows on the primary platform. But normally and usually what we are using is Savix. We have a proof node network. We have around 40 proof nodes around the world. We try to place these networks in countries in which there are a lot of internet users. The data centers that we choose to place these proof node networks have a lot of access to internet providers, so we have really good connectivity under IPv4 and IPv6. And it's important to mention that in specification 10, the algorithm that is there, that is defined on how we are doing the monitoring, it's basically defined with the idea that false positives are mitigated. And it's important to mention that we have never detected a false positive. All the issues, all the incidents that we have detected in the system have been real issues, have been solved, obviously. But it's very important to mention this. We have not had any false positive until this day. Once we detect an issue, once we detect an incident, we have an escalation algorithm, and the way this works is the following, right? If we detect an issue, we send an alert to all the emergency and technical contacts at the thresholds that you can see on the screen. So all the emergency contacts, the three of them, plus the technical contact, you will receive these alerts. Also, at this percentage, we start automated phone calls. And these phone calls are initiated by the system, so they are automated. And the way it works is the following. We normally call we always call the first emergency contact. And if the emergency contact doesn't acknowledge the call, then we call the second emergency contact and so on. We try three times per emergency contact. And you can acknowledge the call by pressing zero. And this is very important. If you receive a call and you don't want the escalation to continue, you just need to press zero, and that means that you have acknowledged the call and that you are aware that there is an issue that you need to go and fix, right? And it's also important to mention that we have implemented what we call call memory. So how this works, if the same group of persons already receive a call, you are not going to receive another call in the next 30 minutes. So if you are a portfolio register operator or backend register operator, and you have issues with several TLDs, you will receive a call, you will acknowledge that call, and you won't receive another call during 30 minutes. Because we don't want to start making a lot of calls to you right while you are trying to solve the issue. There is an aggregation algorithm implemented into the solution. So that means that if you're a portfolio registry and you have issues with several TLDs, we try to aggregate the alerts into the smallest amount possible. So if you have 100 TLDs and the 100 TLDs are failing, you are going to receive just one alert and one phone call. We also hire a contractor to provide NOC services on a 24/7 basis. And the idea of this provider or the idea of this NOC is to try to get an acknowledgement from a person, a human being, right? Because normally, when we do these automated phone calls, we have found that some of them are maybe call centers or maybe the automated systems. So this NOC, the idea is to get an acknowledgement from a human being and be sure that a human being, that a person, has acknowledged and understands that there is an issue, right? The NOC can also provide you with the information that we have in the system. So if we send you an alert regarding DNS or RDDS, you can call them and ask them if the issue is still present. And level 2 and level 3 support is provided by ICANN staff. We provide this service on BSL4 basis. So a lot of registries have asked ICANN if we can provide access to this information. And we are working on an API. So by around the end of March, you will have access to all these data points. This is going to be provided through the RRI interface. This is the same interface that you use for data escrow and for monitoring for the monthly reports. So we're working on that, and you will have access to all the information that is within the system for your TLD, obviously. So let me talk about the issues that we have found, how these issues have been solved. And the first problem that we have found is that sometimes the registries are not whitelisting the IP addresses of our proof node network. So we start doing the monitoring, and we get blocked by the rate limiting or firewall or whatever you have in the middle, right? So the solution is pretty simple. Please try to whitelist our proof nodes. You can find the IP addresses in the GDD portal. We change those IP addresses from time to time when we find a better data center or better connectivity. But we try to keep those static. Another problem that we have found is that the registries, they are monitoring their platforms, but they are monitoring from their internal networks. And so we call them and we say, hey, we found this issue with RDDS or DNS or whatever. And the response is, well, I'm not seeing any issue. Everything is fine. But the problem is that they are monitoring from their own network. And there may be firewalls, there may be balancers, and other middle boxes that are in the path of the end user to your services, and you are not monitoring those. So if you're going to monitor, please try to monitor from an external network, or at least try to monitor your external appliances. We have found a lot of DNS issues. Well, not a lot, but some DNS issues. And we have found DNSSEC issues of different kinds, right? Some TLDs have lost access to their private keys, and we have gone through emergency root zone updates. We also have some expired signatures, so they forgot sometimes to resign the zone. And we also have found issues with assignment platforms. So, for example, we found an issue with some dynamic updates in assignment platform that were breaking NSSEC records. And we have also found issues, for example, with platforms that were generating several signatures per resource record. And obviously, this was breaking the crypto part of DNSSEC. So the solution is pretty simple, right? Try to test your operational procedures, including your platforms. We have found issues with the zone nic.tld. Most registries delegate this zone to other name services, different from the TLD. And we have found that sometimes this zone is not working properly, DNSSEC is not working. And this zone is important, right? Because if you try to access the RDDS service, you go through whois.nic.tld. So if this zone is failing, the whois service is going to fail. So the solution is also pretty simple. Try to monitor nic.tld and try to use the same standards that you are using for your TLD. In the same regard, with whois.nic.tld, we have found the same issue. Some registries are not monitoring that the DNS part of the name is working properly. So it's the same thing. You need to monitor that this is working right. We have found IPv6 issues. From the specification 10 perspective, IPv4 and IPv6 are equal. So when we monitor, if there is issues with IPv6, we consider those issues to be of the same importance as IPv4. So this means that you also need to try to find out connectivity over IPv6 that is within the same service level agreements that you have for your IPv4, for example. We have found issues with name servers. From our perspective, sometimes it appears that there are a few name servers that appears to be over unicast. So in that case, the solution is try to use anycast. We have found issues with name servers that is, instead of sending the actual TLD response or the actual response, they are sending server fails. So what we have found is that the zone transfer platform, the platform that the registries are using to transfer the zones between name servers, is not working properly. So if you are going to monitor the DNS, also monitor the infrastructure that is in responsible for transferring the zone files. And these are basically the frequent issues that we have found in the system. And now I think that we can start with the panelists.
Thank you, Gustavo. So just a reminder for those that were not here at the beginning, this panel is going to be bilingual, English-Chinese. So unless you speak both languages, you may want to get one of these. Channel 1 is English, Channel 4 is Chinese. So we have three registries here that we are very thankful that they are willing to share their experiences with us. And let's start first to my left with, and I apologize, I'm probably not going to say your name right, Wenzel Liu. He started his career in CNIC as senior developer in 1999, later became director of technology department, and since 2009, he's the chief technology officer at Keynet and CDNS. So his company is the backend operator of several new ETLDs. Wenzel?
大家好，我是来自中国那个Knet的卢文哲，非常高兴在这儿跟大家交流一下我们在这个就域名New记的这个New记运行方面的一些经验吧。我本人以前是在那个 CNIC 负责这个技术工作。 所以说在对CCTLD呢可能有些经验，然后这两年呢开始负责这个 GTLD 的工作，可能和大家一样，对我来说也是一个比较新的一个领域。昨天呢，我和我的那个技术团队啊，包括开发团队和运行团队呢，就开了一个会，然后总结了一下我们这两年这两三年吧，从事这个 GTLD 工作一些经验。 在这儿呢，主要是想向 ICANN 的这个技术知识部门啊提一些建议。我们运行的这个 TLD 比较多，有20多个，在亚洲算是比较多的。所以说我相信我们碰到的一些问题啊，或者提的一些建议，可能还是有一定的代表性。我们提的这个第一个建议呢，就是我们 碰到的问题中间，很多时候呢，就会是一些和 ICANN 这边沟通方面，或者说理解方面的时候，一些专业名词理解方面的时候，可能会有一些问题。所以说，我们建议 ICANN 能够在整个工作流程中，能够把一些工作流程的定义啊，就是能够更清晰一点，更详细一些。 我举一个小例子，就是我们确实也碰到过这样的问题，就是说，比如说我们在 PDD 测试之后，然后再到这个入根，再到开放注册这个过程中呢，每个环节要做哪些事情，可能有一些环节定义呢就不是非常的，就是会有些歧义，就导致我们比如说我们什么时候开始正式发月报啊，或者什么时候开始正式的向那个 提供这个 Data Explorer 的这个数据啊，这些我觉得有一些可能还定义的不是很清楚，我们也碰到这样的问题。第二个建议呢，就是在我们的工作流程中间啊，就是有一些名词的定义呢，可能也是希望 ICANN 这边能够定义的更清晰一点。我们这边也碰到一个例子，就是比如说我们在做一些统计计算的时候。 那个统计方法，当时还跟 ICANN 这边就是知识中心同事沟通过，然后最后得到那个数据结果还是不准确，那个统计数字和 ICANN 对它的理解呢就不太一样，最后导致我们的客户在 ICANN 这边还多收了一些钱，这个问题现在我们还在解决过程中，我觉得类似这样的问题就是。 类似这样的问题，可能还会有一些，我不知道其他人是不是碰到过，这个我们碰到过的一些问题。这是我们第一个建议，就是在这个工作流程的这些流程，还有这个名词的定义上面能够更清楚一些，指导意义更强一点。第二个建议呢，就是希望 ICANN 这边能够提供一些技术工作的最佳实践 best practice 的一些。 能够有一些最佳实践的案例，我们自己在做这个技术平台的过程中间，其中有一个案例，比如方面，就比如包括我们 monitoring 监控这些方面呢，做的就是做的比较，做的工作量比较大，我们也是使用这 Zabbix 这样的监控系统，然后还有 iMonitor 这样的监控系统。 在做监控项，比如说ICANN这边能够有一些，我有一些，比如说这最佳实践的一些案例的话，比如说他们在做外部监控的时候，他们都考虑了哪些因素，是怎么监控的，我觉得可能会对后来的 registry 的话。 他们的工作开展的话，可能会有一些比较好的一些帮助。还有一些，就比如说我们在，这也是我们实际碰到的一个问题，就是我们的，因为我们做 backend 嘛，我们的客户他有时候不太愿意说那技术紧急联系人写成我们公司的，这样导致出现的问题就是说，故障发生的时候。 我们得到消息比较晚，后来在处理呢，就已经前面已经浪费一段时间了。我建议，比如艾肯可以在，就比如提一个最佳实践的话，就比如说这个技术联系人就可以写 backend 的这联系方式，然后我们的客户呢，他可能更容易理解一点，比我们去跟我们客户沟通呢，可能更容易理解一点。这是我第二个建议，就是我们在这最佳实践方面，艾肯能够提供一些案例。 我们的第三个建议呢，就是我们作为 Registry 的技术运行服务商呢，我们发现，在和同行交流过程中，缺少一些就是比较正式的一些渠道。主要是我们，如果说我建议我们在 ICANN 是不是可以搞一个网站，或者搞一些邮件列表 mailing list 这样的，能够专门讨论这些 Registry 的技术问题。 我们现在有时候碰到一些问题呢，只是说，在一个比较小的范围里面来讨论。如果通过这种 GDD 来反馈的话呢，它的时间会比较长，周期也比较长，最好是能有一个这样的渠道，这样我觉得可能就是方会方便很多。我们大概提的建议呢，就是大概就是这三个比较。 主要的建议，我个人的有些建议，就比如说，可能美国可能的 IPv6 的普及情况好一点，现在中国的 IPv6 就几乎没有什么太多的应用环境，运营商呢也不太提供这样的网络环境，是不是有必要对 IPv6 提这么高的要求和 IPv4？ 对等的要求，因为我们 IPv6 的节点的流量都非常非常少，这我个人的一个一点小问题，其他的没有什么，谢谢 Francisco。
Thank you, Wetzel. Very good points that you raise. I just took note of a couple here. The emergency context, it's a good point to consider for the contracted parties to. Consider having your backend provider as perhaps one of the emergency contacts, or have some other mechanism so that you can quickly notify them so that they can take action on the issue. On regards to some sources of information or places where you can find help in case of issues, there is of course the GED portal where we can. Help with any questions that you may have regarding the specifications in the register agreement. And of course, there is also some self-help in, for example, the GTLD tech mailing list that we have available and where many of the technical operators participate. So there is a place to ask questions and get answers from your own colleagues. So thank you. So with this, let's pass the microphone now to Alexander Merhofer. He's the head of the research and development at NIC-AT. He has been the project lead in designing implementing and deploying NIC-AT's new ETLD registry solution called Registry in a Box, which is now operational for 9 new ETLDs, most of them Geo TLDs. Alex?
Thank you, Francisco. Good morning, everyone. First, let me make a note. We discussed yesterday, and we said it was really funny that actually only sort of the new guys on the block are sitting on that panel, while the well-established big new GTLD operators are actually listening. So that made us wonder why that was the case. But that's a different story. I understand that maybe bigger companies probably have different paths in allowing people to speak about issues that they experienced. Let us look back. The start for us into the operational reality of GTLD operations was almost exactly 1 year ago, when the first of our GTLDs started with the Sunrise. So we were one of the first registries to actually have a registration open. And when we did all the onboarding back then, it was a different time maybe, because when I did the onboarding for each of the TLDs, the onboarding information request looked different each time we did it. So there was a lot of change on both sides, I think, of the industry, on ICANN's side as well as on the registry side as well. So that was also a time when it was not really clear which of the contacts that we provided in the onboarding information were used for what purpose, especially since to our perception, it was very wise to supply a role contact as an emergency contact, because people go on vacation. And we were told by ICANN, no, you can't provide a role contact for the emergency contact, we want the name. Yeah. So that was sort of confusing us, because we thought that in case of emergency, you really want to address a group of people. I understand that, as we talked yesterday, that there is no clear documentation how each of those emergency contacts is being used. And also the system that that Gustavo presented before didn't exist back then. So it was like actual people calling the registries. So quite openly, what were the issues that we encountered? The first issue that we encountered is that when we started with the Sunrise of our first TLD, the SMD files that we got by the registrars suddenly looked slightly different than what the SMD files that we received from the TMCH test interface looked like. And I had received warnings from my programmers, because they said that TMCH did provide us with exactly 4 SMD test files. That is crazy. I can't do serious testing. Expect that there will be some problems there. So, and that was exactly what happened. We had problems with a subset of SMD files, parsing them. There was some change to the encoding or something like that. And it took us like one or 2 hours to fix that problem and deploy it like into the hot registry system, which was scary. that would have been possible to avoid if the TMCH would have provided, for example, a system where you could create your own test SMDs right on their platform, so sort of a full test cycle with the TMCH. The other scenario that we encountered is we configured the list of probes that we were using for whitelisting the WHOIS service when we deployed the system, and there was no information on whether those lists would change, how frequent it would change, and how we would actually get updates. And as I've now learned, that it seems to be that this list is also available in the GDT portal. However, since we as a backend operator don't even have an account for the GDT portal, I can't actually access that list. So I understand there are other sources for that as well. But as a suggestion, I would really appreciate if ICANN could consider giving backend operators at least some kind of read-only account to the GDD of the TLDs they are hosting, because otherwise, as I said, I can't access that information that is put in there. So what happened is actually that, according to the message that we got from ICANN, your WHOIS is down. Okay. Problem number one, those monitoring messages, they don't really include a lot of debugging information. So to actually get more information rather than "we think it's down" involves contacting you guys. So that would be an area where improvement would be very valid. And then we had to go back and forth to understand what the problem was, because to our perception, the whois server ran fine, and we are just returning an error message that says whois quota exceeded in case of a certain IP address goes over the query limit, and that was exactly what was happening. And the reason in turn was that we didn't whitelist a couple of the new probes that were added into the monitoring system. And so at some point, the monitoring system had more than 50% of the probes going over the query whois limit and triggered an alert. It was easy to fix as soon as we understood the problem. So it was more like understanding that there is no problem in connecting to the whois server. It's rather that the problem is that we are sort of rate limiting the probes in the wrong way. And the third scenario that we had when we started doing the architecture, like almost 5 years ago, I think, we thought it would be a good idea to combine Anycast with Unicast. And the reason for that was because in case there is substantial problem with the with Anycast technology as a whole, which means like weird BGP filtering going on, we really wanted to have at least one Unicast server in the delegation set. So in case all of the Anycast goes down for whatever reason, bug in some router software, we still wanted to have one Unicast instance. And it turned out that obviously that Unicast instance was also the weak point in the name server network, obviously. So we had a situation where even though 18 of the 20 physical nodes that we used for a TLD to provide name service were still up, the DNS service was considered down by ICANN due to a structure of the SLA and due to the fact that a Unicast server is vulnerable. Yeah, but as long as there is a strong Anycast network running as well, while the Unicast name server is down, it still doesn't impact the service quality. Let me check my notes. I also learned that there is going to be an API for the SLA monitoring, which is really, really nice and was something that we asked for from the very beginning. And so what we are going to do is we are going to use that API to fetch that information from the ICANN SLA monitoring system so that we can detect an error almost as quickly as you can and remedy it before it even goes into notification. That's something really great. What else have I noted? I'm proud to say that since we did DNSSEC for .at since a while, we didn't have any issues with the DNSSEC signing of the zone. One thing that we actually reduced the quality of monitoring that we can do, what we are using is we are using a sort of an end of zone domain. So the last possible domain name, I think it's set and then a lot of dashes, is contained in the .at zone at the end of the zone. However, we couldn't use that for the gTLDs because you were not allowed to put any other name into the zone besides nick.tld. So actually, that sort of name collision avoidance requirement made actually it impossible for us to make sure that the zone was really completely and fully generated and loaded onto the name servers. And I got advice that we could, of course, do an RSAP for that, but we thought it would really not be worse. So there's maybe a little bit of conflict between technical requirements and operational sensible things to do that then collide with requirements from the specification. That is just the most obvious example that came to my mind. Yeah, I think that's about it. As a whole, what I can really suggest people is make sure you got the right contacts in the GDD portal. Make sure that those phone numbers that are in there make actually sense so that ICANN folks can reach you if there's a problem. And it looks like we are going to get a lot more information from you guys, which is great because it helps as a whole operational practice. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. So a couple of points that I would like to mention here quickly. So you are right, Alex. This has been a learning exercise, I guess we could say, for both parties, the registries and ICANN as we go in the way we learn more things. And now we have more information that is available to you, like the welcome kit, for example, that explains all the roles of the contacts and where you can get certain information and so on and so forth. Also some miscommunications that now are hopefully resolved. For example, the possibility to have role accounts for the emergency contact. That's something that is, of course, a must if you want to have a 7x24 response time. On the proof notes, there is also something that we just implemented. There was a request by some registries that were saying, well, we would like to be notified when there is a change in the proof notes. So we'll be doing that. Future changes to the proof notes, we will send an advance notification with at least 72 hours before the proof notes enter into production. And as you mentioned, having more debugging information, that's also coming. The API for the SLA monitoring system that will allow registries to have access to the information we are seeing almost in real time as we are seeing it. So you don't have to wait until the 10%, which will be the first notice that you would get otherwise. Finally, the other thing, having multiple accounts in the GED portal is also something that we have in the roadmap. I see Christine here. It's something that is in the room, but it's coming. So with this, I would like to pass the microphone to David Peel. He has been involved in the ccctld.ca, that's the CCTLD for South Africa, since 2001 as the domain administrator for school.ca and a member of the CA Domain Name Authority. He joined Domain Name Services in 2010, assisting the conversion to an EPP registry that now services over 400 local registrars with a million domain names. David Peel is involved in the GTLD applications and backend for Cape Town, Joburg, Durban, and South Africa. David?
Thank you for the opportunity to share our experiences. Domain Name Services started development on its registry service in 2010, so it's a fairly new EPP implementation. And we feel that this gives us an opportunity to look at ourselves from the outside and identify where we can improve. I'd like to second some of the calls for clearer notifications about what's required when you launch a GTLD, when those reports are due, and the escrow and all that, because it isn't clear from the welcome packs that you get. And then in South Africa, we, and it sounds like it's not unique to us, we struggle with IPv6 support and troubleshooting from our transit providers. They don't actually supply IPv6 to their customers, but if you convince them, they will transit your own IPv6. And what we found is we've had to build special relationships with key people in those transit providers, so that we are able to pick up a phone, someone that we know can actually look at the problem. If you drop the support ticket into their support machine, it really just goes nowhere. And that came to us trying to monitor our global reachability, and with the internet being 3 to 4 ASs wide, but containing tens of thousands of ASs, this is a bit of a daunting task. So we turned our monitoring to point at the ICANN probes, but they seem to be a bit of a moving target. And we're looking for suggestions, but I think the API may solve most of that. And then to move to the next item, we were first a CC, so we have zone generation servers and we have zone distribution servers and monitoring around that, you know, making sure that the zone is moved from a distribution server to all our secondaries. But when we did the GTLDs, we inserted a blip on the wire black box DNS6 signing engine, and when you're not looking, it turns off, and your generation's working and your distribution's working, but there's no new signatures coming through. So we had problems with that. So we've added, obviously, new monitoring, and this is an iterative process to make sure that what we're generating and what we're distributing are the same thing. So a lot of this could be identified a lot quicker if we had backend providers had access to an API. And we see that the gaps are closing and these problems will become smaller and smaller, but maybe sharing them up front with other registry operators means that they won't trip over the same things. The last item I'd like to bring up is the very poor response from registrars in terms of TMCH integration. We were very disappointed during our Sunrise and Landrush that we had customers knocking on our door going, we would like to, you know, here's our TMCH SMD, how do we get to you? We only had a handful of registrars that even bothered to do TMCH integration, the likes of Lexenergy and Mark Monitor, and they don't really service the public. And perhaps there's a opportunity here in next rounds or even further applications where registries are prepared to do development and innovate. Registrars are really just there to service the bulk customers. So something out of band that the registries could operate to provide claims checks, to provide claims notices, to accept SMDs out of band is possibly something we would like to suggest. And that's me.
Thank you. So I think we are starting hearing the kind of things that we need to improve. The proof notes is a common topic here, and hopefully this new process that we are putting in place will help so that you will have a bad notice of the changes we're making. And of course the API that has been a common request across many registries, having the ability to have that information in real time. Before opening the floor to questions, I would like to pass the microphone to our CTO, ICANN CTO, David Conrad.
Just like to thank all the panelists for being willing to talk about their desires and the issues that they've encountered. I very much appreciate the input, and I think that sort of collaboration with the community will actually enable us to move forward much more efficiently. As Francisco mentioned, the majority of registries had one issue or another, so there's no one particularly innocent in this room. We very much appreciate the input that you've been willing to provide. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Is there any comment that the panelists would like to make, or should we open the floor to questions? Should we? Okay. So are there any questions? Rich?
Thanks. I wanted to speak to what Alex, I believe his name is Alex, said earlier about the fact that we were previously getting notices that your whois is down. And obviously we think that our whois is up or we wouldn't be carrying on in this fashion. So I'm very grateful for the fact that now we're getting more explicit indications that this attempt failed on this day at this time and this is how and when we tried it. Because when I send that to my tech folks, they can do something with it. So I really appreciate that, and thank you very much for that. Can we go back briefly to slide number 9? Gustavo, I believe, was talking about the 3 tries with call memory. And my question is, you give 3 tries to the same phone number, unless that phone number is duplicated for multiple registries, in which case, let me back up. You give 3 tries to one phone number regardless of whether or not there are multiple registries involved. Is that correct?
So it's a little bit more complex than that, right? So what we have found is some registries, they list only the registry operator as the emergency context. Others list the backend registry operator as emergency 3 or emergency 2. So even within the same, let's say, portfolio registry operator or portfolio backend, we have found different scenarios. So what we try to do is the following. If the same email addresses, we group all the alerts, and if we found that those alerts, they share the same email addresses for the 4 of them, then we consider that to be an aggregation point. So we will try to do the calls and email, and we send the email alerts, and we try to do the automated phone calls for that group. But if you have different scenarios within your TLDs and the email addresses are different, then you may receive several calls, maybe for a group, maybe for another group of TLDs, and maybe for another group of TLDs. So basically, the email addresses is the information that we're using to do the grouping of the information.
Okay, but we're talking about phone numbers, I think, not email addresses. So my understanding is that it's the same. So if there's duplicative phone numbers over registries, you're only going to get it. You will still get three tries, is what I'm getting at. Correct? Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Atsushi Endo from JBRS, for the record. Please go to the slide. Slide number is 13. That's 13 at IP wide listing. Yes, it's a. This says the full list available in GDE Porter, but the right now I cannot find it in the GDE Porter. Is this my problem, mine or the all other operator cannot find or not?
So if memory serves, you find the list in the OMBIR, and also in the welcome kit, there is a section that has the link to find the proof notes. So the welcome kit or in the OMBIR in the GDE portal.
This is a related question. That's on the last year, that registry roadshow, you give us the information of the IP addresses, and also that in the presentation it's listed, and also that, yes, you as you mentioned, there's a list of the addresses, but we find that it changed. That not that it's you access as not listed. Address not listed in the white list. So, is it updated? You change the addresses or not? And if in the case it changed it, please provide us the information as soon as possible. And on the other side of the things, that is it okay to block the addresses not listed in the white list?
Yes, of course. The IP addresses that are listed there are the ones we're using for monitoring. But as we have said before, they have changed from time to time as find new nodes or change them because, I don't know, they have some issue in some data center. So that's the process I was referring before, that we will be starting with the next change that we have. We will give advance notice to the registries before putting the IP addresses in operation 72 hours ahead. Thanks.
Thank you.
Joe?
Thanks, Francisco. Joe Waldron from VeriSign. I'm going to make two points or questions. First, I think I heard from all the panelists some observations that sound very familiar. And I'm going to repeat a request that I've made in the past, which is when it comes to the actual implementation of some of these back-end services that we have that ICANN's contracted with, I think it's absolutely important that we have a community review of that statement of work in some form or fashion, specifically what the monitoring is around SLA monitoring. Is important to registry operators. I mean, that's ultimately a contractual impact to our ability to continue to operate, and it's important that we understand in a significant amount of detail how that monitoring has taken place. There's a good community review of that so that everybody has a good understanding of how that's working, rather than just say, you know, the the API, the information is posted by Zabbix, but there are operational implementations of that that I think are important. And if we want to be on the same page in terms of how we're monitoring, what our expectations are, I think it's important that we have some kind of community review of those systems. I think the Trademark Clearinghouse is another example of something similar where that kind of engagement would have benefited and certainly would benefit going forward. My second point is, again, to the IP whitelisting. And I have some serious concerns with a concept where we've got a list that's posted that the registry is supposed to just go accept the IP addresses that are posted on this list and whitelist those. You're talking about access into the registry systems, and this is a security and stability issue for me, that this is a company that is essentially acting as a registrar, and we should expect that they follow the same types of procedures, processes that have been long established in terms of how we grant access into our systems to our registrars. There's a registrar account that they are allocated. So I think that we have a process that we use to update our access control list. We should expect that ICANN's registrar that is performing this SLA monitoring would follow those same processes.
Thank you, Joe. Regarding the documentation, I would say at a general level we have, of course, specification 10, and at a you have the in regards to the monitoring system, it's an open source option that we're using. I asked Gustavo to post the link to the SVN repository so that anyone that is interested can get access to the code, so you can see down to the last detail how the monitoring is implemented. Regarding the list of the nodes, that's a great point. Right now we have it on HTTPS, but if we would like to have PGP sign or some other mechanism, I'm happy to hear any suggestion on what would you like to see there.
Yeah, and I'm happy to share our normal processes that we've had registrars using to request those types of updates. There's just a standard process that they request a new IP address to be added, and we put that in. But that way, there's a request. There's an acceptance of the request, and then we implement that. Rather than going out and just pulling down a list, I've gone and looked at some of those IP addresses, and they belong to companies that I've never heard of. And to add an IP address that has access into our systems that is questionable, I think just causes me some concern.
So I will take that as a compliment, the fact that you don't know some of these companies, because that means we are doing a good job in finding diversity on the connectivity that we're using. But thank you. We'll be open to hear any suggestions on how to improve this process. Rubens?
Rubens Kielnick, PR for the record. To Alexander Meyhofer's comment of DNSSEC monitoring, I would like to point out that ICANN has already suggested in its registry amendment negotiations the allowance for more records for DNSSEC monitoring, so they are akin to that request. What I didn't hear, though, in this presentation was about services that are not listed as critical services. So we are only talking about the specification 10, which specifies critical services or data escrow, but there are services that are not considered critical according to agreement, like CZDS, like Zune File Access, that ends up being critical, because Zune File Access is today what is driving name collision monitoring. And name collision monitoring is business critical to registries, because it ends up defining when a registry can sell domains and can activate domains after controlled interruption period. So we have suffered several issues with the considered non-critical systems like Zune File, BRDA, and so forth, when IP addresses were not updated or not listed. And so I would like to suggest that those systems, that because they have compliance effects and business effects, would have the same treatment as the current critical systems, and we recognize that they can have an impact even without they don't call them critical. Thank you.
Great point, Rubens. Rich, and then Chris.
I have another quick question about whitelisting. Would it be possible to get a list of the email addresses and phone numbers that you use so that we can whitelist those as well?
Yes, I mean, we can provide that list.
Thank you.
Thanks, Francisco. I'd like to echo those concerns that Joe's raised, especially around how this monitoring has been implemented. I understand that the software is open source and we can go and download and look at the software, but you know, that's just one part. Like, this thing's now been architected somehow. Somebody's decided frequency of probes and so forth. You've decided that you're going to have, I think it was 40 probes out there. You know, are they each doing it once every 30 seconds, or you know, are they rotating through, or you know, these sort of things would be good to understand. Particularly with some of the smaller TLDs that we're operating, we're seeing that ICANN is actually responsible for most, you know, more if not all of the load on the system rather than anything else. And then perhaps once we get a better understanding of that, maybe we can have some discussions about, you know, whether those frequencies are actually required for your purposes and so forth, especially on some of the smaller TLDs. So general, just like documentation or something that we can have a look at to understand how that works. That would be really helpful. I then wanted to know if there was a way to opt out of phone notifications, especially for the earlier stages, the 10, the 20, or the 30%. Because especially if something happens at a point in time, what I don't want is the technical people that are trying to resolve the issue being bombarded with phone calls. I want them to resolve the issue. And if they don't answer the phone call, apparently they're going to keep getting called until they do. Now, we could probably try and move those phone call notifications to another area of the business, but then it kind of defeats the purpose because the people that are there. So I wonder if we could consider that. Then with the 72-hour notice of changing the whitelists, I was just wondering, you know, how do we decide on 72 hours? Some registries, depending on what we're updating, right, some registries will require, by the time we go through change control and sign off and so forth for these things, you know, do the checks that you need to do and so forth, it can take longer than 72 hours, you know, particularly if it's you know, posted on a Friday. You know, I don't necessarily want to have people have to come in on weekends to update things and so forth. So just wondering if we can reconsider that a little bit. I think that's all I had on my list, right? Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. So let's see if I get, I got three questions here. The frequency, that's very easy. That's in spec time. We query DNS every minute. We query RDS every 5 minutes.
Yeah, but is that every probe every minute?
Yes.
Or are you distributing it across the probes?
No, every probe node.
So per probe?
Per probe, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
In fact, that's described in the spec then. That's a high-level requirement. The opt-out for phone calls, we currently don't have that feature. Mm-hmm. If it's of interest, we can certainly consider implementing. Let's talk more about that. Regarding the 72-hour, if you think you need more time, I'm happy to change that. So please propose something. Yeah, so you know my email.
Yeah, thank you.
Go ahead, Alex.
Another thing that just came to my mind, you are currently not doing sort of the full EPP test that I think you have discussed you would be doing. So it would be actually good if, once you know how those tests are going to look like, that you talk to registry operators and tell them what you're actually going to do. So I'm
wondering what kind of EPP transactions will those EPP registrars be doing, because we also see the registrars that we have created for that monitoring system as sort of a security risk, as Joe said before, because they are sort of idling in our system. The password is never being changed. Yeah? So we really want to get a heads up on before they are going to be put to use.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we enable EPP, we have heard that comment from Joe and others. We understand the criticality of that system. So before we enable that, we will be talking with you on how is the best way to work on this. So thanks.
Also, short comment to that. It's also interesting because those domain names that the registrar will create will obviously also show up in the ICANN report, and who is going to pay for those? So.
There is an easy answer to that. That there is a provision in Spec 10 that says there are no fees for those, I think the plan that it's to have only one domain name, if I remember correctly. So we created once, and then we just do updates to monitor the system.
Elmar Knipp from Tango Registry Systems. I have 3 points. Two are saying thanks, first for the session, second that you will provide us with the API for your monitoring system. And my question to this is, did I understand it right that it's the same interface where we put the monthly reports?
Yes, the API to the monitoring system will be using an extension of the API that you're currently using to send the monthly reports.
Okay, then I have a friendly suggestion that we get a second credentials, because in our case, the sending the monthly report is a totally different department than the monitoring department. So perhaps we can get a second credential there, and this is only read-only or something else. This would help us to set up different departments.
Okay, good point. The current plan we have is to... We were trying to minimize the need to have more credentials, so we were planning on using exactly the same users. But I get your point, so we will look into that. Probably will not be in the release that we have already planned, because it's already underway, but we will consider for the next release. Yes, Chris?
So I just picked up on something in the conversation just then that kind of goes to illustrate the point before about understanding the architecture and how it's going to work. You just mentioned that with EPP, you're thinking of using one domain and just updating that presumably from all the different probes. And then if we go back to the frequency, if there are 40 probes and if it's set up in such a way that, let's say, they're doing their monitoring check every minute on the minute, not staggered or anything like that. When you design a registry system, one of the things that you tend to not worry about is multiple commands coming in to update a same single domain simultaneously, because generally that doesn't happen, right? A registrar typically doesn't do that. And what you're actually going to find, in our registry anyway, is if you had 40 probes attempting to update the one domain at once, one of those, depending on the timing, one of those probes is going to succeed, and the other 39 are going to fail, saying that that domain is currently being manipulated by another session. So this is why it's important that we understand this architecture, so that we can give you this feedback to do. And I guess that's the purpose of today, but we need some more in-depth detail to let you know. So you'd be getting lots of false positives from our system when you turned that on if you used a single domain for EPP, or you'd have to look for that specific response. But you won't be getting the success response that I assume you would be looking for. So it's a good example of why we need to dive into this a little bit more.
So, like I said, EPP, we're not enabling that yet, and we will certainly be talking with you, the registries, before we do that. We are 4 minutes before the hour. Any last comments from the panelists? Any last question? No? Okay, with this, I will... thank the panelists and everyone for attending. Thank you very much.